Hello, hello. Welcome to the Jack of No Trades podcast, a podcast about people and what they do. I am your host, Michelle McAllister. On today's episode, we're going to go political. We talk to Marnie Von Wilpert. She is an attorney and politician currently serving as a member of the San Diego City Council, representing the 5th District, which, funnily enough, includes our old neighborhood. She and I will talk about what it's like to be an underdog, her experience in the Peace Corps, and her latest efforts to take on ghost guns. On top of all of that, she's just the nicest badass I think I've ever known. I hope you enjoy this episode with Marnie Von Wilpert.
So, my name is Marnie Von Wilpert. I am a San Diego City Council member. I represent District 5, which is the northeastern part of San Diego. It's Scripps Ranch, where I grew up in and where, you know, Michelle grew up in, down the street from each other. It's also Carl Mountain, Rancho Bernardo, Penasquitos, Sabre Springs, and San Pasqual, which is actually one of the largest organic farming communities in San Diego. I have a dairy farm in my district.
You do?
Yeah. And avocado farms, citrus farms. So I have a lot of folks I represent.
Learn something new every day. But what's it like being in the old hood?
Yeah, no, it's grown a lot. It's been really fun, though, to represent Scripps Ranch and our home neighborhood, because, you know, people recognize me all the time, or our high school friends' parents will write in and say, hey, I know you went to school with my daughter, Erica, and I now am a retired nuclear physicist. So can you please appoint me to the Energy Resources Board? And I'll say, of course, this is great. And so it's been wonderful to see all the people we grew up with. We just had the 4th of July parade, which is an outdoor social distance event. And it was great. I got to see so many of our friends, and I wouldn't stay in the car because, you know, you're supposed to ride in the back of a convertible.
Right.
Sit there and you wave, you have your signs. I kept getting out of the car to go hug our friends on the side of the street because I'm vaccinated. Great. But so that meant an empty car was driving through the parade. My mom was driving it. It said, Marnie Von Wilpert, City Council. And 2 minutes later, I come running down behind it, waving. So next year, my staff decided I don't get a car.
Well, see, this is why you can't have nice things. You came into office in 2020 and you were the underdog, right?
I was.
What was it like learning the results, and how has it been since you've taken office?
Yeah, it was, this is my first campaign, and for city council in San Diego, you have to campaign for about 2 years. It's really long. I'd like to shorten it. Voters are exhausted. Volunteers are exhausted. I was exhausted as a candidate, but for my primary, which was March 3rd of 2020, we were all shocked that I won the primary. I was the only woman in my race. It was me and 5 men, dropped down to me and 4 men at one point. Yep. And then I won. I came in first. And so I knew I'd go up against the second place finisher. But we had a huge party at a hotel ballroom. You know, the entire county Democratic Party did. So the Democratic, or the county Republican Party, they had a different ballroom. And we just celebrated and came together and met with all the newscasters who wanted statements. It was such a time of joy. And then 3 days later, the whole county shuts down for a public health order, because coronavirus is here.
Right.
And so the second half of my campaign had to be indoors, which was a complete shock. We were all in the same boat, you know, it happened, but that's why I found myself really learning how to use social media a lot more, instead of house parties where people would invite me to homes and I would meet all the neighbors and have a potluck and answer questions. It was Zoom parties and they'd have to meet their candidate online. I did so much more social media. Everything I did had to go on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, post to all the pages. So it was pretty crazy, the difference between the primary and the general, but it was so exciting. The day we found out, with the mail-in ballots, you get more voter participation, which is great, but it takes longer to count. So you don't really get those night of results, which is fine. I'd rather have more people vote, but I knew either way, had to get out of town. I had to get a break. So I had booked a cabin trip up to Big Bear with some friends. Win or loss, I needed a bit of a break. And it was beautiful because we woke up and it was snowing that Saturday morning. And I get a call from my campaign general consultant, says, Marnie, your concession call is going to come in 10 minutes. His campaign manager already called me to concede. They saw the numbers and you've won. And it was just incredible. We got to open champagne and, you know, be up in the cabin in the snow. And then we found out later that day that Biden and Harris had won. We had the first female vice president of the United States. It was an incredible feeling. And, you know, my opponent, the campaign trail got pretty rough. You know, a lot of attacks came, but I was really grateful for our transition. At the very, at the end, he's been very gracious, and he even sent me flowers the day I got inaugurated. Yeah, it was very nice. You know, I've been meeting regularly with my predecessor. His name's Mark Kersey, and he's Republican, and he has been in this district, has been Republican forever, but it doesn't matter to me. He endorsed my opponent in the race, and I don't take any of that personal, because it's not about me. And it's about good governance. And so the transition of government means I talked to my predecessor, I learned from him what was going on, what I have to, projects were still hanging, you know, major things have to be fixed. And we have a great relationship. I really hope that the public gets to see that side of government too, because it can be so angry and divisive right now. I mean, what we saw on January 6th was just absolutely heartbreaking. People in an insurrection at the Capitol. So I just want people in San Diego to know the transition has been really great. We work very collegially with people across all aisles, no matter what, because we care about government and we care about making our city a better place.
Would you say that your experience with a smoother transition of power and more cooperation with those across the aisle is more common on the regional level, or do you think that this is just case by case?
Yeah, I think it's a case by case basis. You know, it's really sad to see what's going on in a lot of other parts of our country with local government. Like, you see school districts in Florida who are begging to wear masks and the governor prohibiting it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, that's really unfortunate. And I'm grateful to be sitting near colleagues who, even if we disagree on something, we are all respectful to each other. We listen to each other. We learn from each other. And we're all working towards the same goal of trying to help the city become an even better place to live for San Diegans. We may have different ideas of how to get there, but we're at least all on the same page that that's what we want. And so I'm feeling very grateful for that right now. I got my first law passed that I wrote. Very exciting.
Congratulations.
Yes, it was earlier in August. It's called the Enough Ordinance, and it stands for the Eliminate Non-Traceable Firearms Ordinance, or Untraceable Firearms Ordinance. Sorry, my staff is going to be like, Marnie, you know what this is. the goal is to try and crack down on the rising gun violence we're seeing in San Diego, and honestly, we're seeing nationally.
Yeah.
In most major cities. I mean, the pandemic has taken quite a toll on our mental health as a society as well. And one of the things we're seeing is these things called ghost guns that people are making in their homes.
Is that like with a printer, or is that like parts you get through the mail and assemble?
Parts you can assemble. 3D printers will get better someday, and we'll probably have to really deal with that. But right now, you can walk into any gun shop or order online an unfinished frame or receiver, which is the lower part of a gun, and it houses the trigger and the clip, and you attach a slide on the top, and within 15 minutes, you can have a fully functional firearm. And in April of 2021, we saw a terrible, terrible mass shooting in the Gaslamp region of San Diego, which is our downtown tourist area. And a man who was in his mid-30s, military vet, horrible mental health history, horrible history with violent felonies, mm-hmm. could not legally purchase a gun. He would trigger on every background check for a reason, because he couldn't be safe with a weapon. And he was able to obtain a ghost gun that could be made at home and sold to anyone without a background check. And he walked downtown and he shot and killed a fellow San Diegan, a 22-year-old valet, working parking cars. And then he shot 3 other tourists before he was tackled. And I asked the police department, is this tragedy a one-off thing, or are we going to start to see these illegal guns everywhere? And they wrote a report and said, Marnie, they're everywhere. We've seen 169% increase in illegal guns on the street. People who are not safe and cannot be trusted with them are using them to commit crimes. So I decided to pass my first ordinance, and it was to put serial numbers on these lower frames and receivers, just so they're treated like any other gun. Lawful gun owners can still get them, still assemble them, still use them. But people who cannot pass background checks will not be able to easily obtain them as they are now. So it was exciting, but I tell the story to say I was going to talk to the one Republican on the city council and ask and say, hey, Chris, his name's Chris Kate, took him to lunch. And I said, do you think I'm going to get your vote on this ghost gun bill? And he said, I don't know, Marty, because I'm, you know, big gun owner. Second, I said, I understand, but I'm, you know, not trying to take guns away from lawful, responsible owners that I'm worried about. You know, it's people who might want to commit violence at a school or a place of worship or an office or harm themselves. That's what I'm worried about. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, I get it, but it's still just ideologically, I'm not going to vote for this. And I said, okay, that's all right. It's still passed 8-1. But when we were on the dais having the vote, it was really incredible. He said the nicest things about me as a colleague. And he just said, Marty is really respectful. The way we've had this conversation has been just remarkable, that it's not angry or divisive. And I feel that you listen to me and I listen to you. And even though we respectfully disagree, I don't think this is going to be a good bill. I just want to thank you for that. And it was really nice for then me to say, well, thank you as well for, you know, being open to dialogue and, you know, and having a reasonable conversation as leaders in government. And so one of the reasons I ran for office was because I'm sick of the anger and division in politics, and I don't want to perpetrate that. So when people are evaluating candidates, I just ask them how they're gonna interact with their colleagues, because the more we all work towards, you know, respect and dignity, I think the better it is for all of us.
I couldn't agree more. Okay, let's switch gears. When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up, and how did you envision your adult self?
You know, I was thinking about this the other day with another friend, and I said, I didn't really know what career I wanted to be or have. I just always envisioned myself holding a briefcase. Why? I have no idea what would be in the briefcase. I just assumed if you were a serious business person, you had a case. I realized that I wanted to be a lawyer when I was in the Peace Corps, actually. And I love being an attorney. It's been an incredible career. Still paying off that law school debt, but...
Oh, yes. The gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. Most of us still have student loans our age. When I was a social worker in the Peace Corps in Botswana, it was the height of the AIDS crisis in sub-Saharan Africa. And so this is actually the second public health crisis I've been through, COVID. But my job was to be a social worker helping care for children who are born with HIV, whose parents had died of AIDS. Oh. So a lot of children had no parents or family to take care of them. And they too had a very serious medical condition that they were born with. It was incredible the way the government worked, the way that private foundations work. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation gave a lot of money to provide antiretroviral therapy to children in Botswana. I could get them food, clothing, medication, but I could not protect them from the stigma and discrimination they would face their whole lives because of a medical condition. And
right.
I would see some of them expelled from school. We had one school in the village at sixth grade, around 12 or 13 years old, because meds would start to fail or they couldn't get them. And they'd start to see the purple blotches of the Kaposi sarcoma on their skin, or other signs of HIV infection, and they'd get expelled at 12 years old. That was the end of their education. Wow. And I would see, you know, adults get fired from jobs, and, you know, women get divorced and disinherited of all their property if they tested HIV positive. And I thought, well, this isn't right. We can't take away these kids' opportunity to lead a very productive life because of its discrimination. And so that's when I decided to go to law school, because I thought, well, we should sue somebody, but I didn't know how to do that yet. But we had no running water or electricity in my village where I lived. And so that meant I had to hitchhike 2.5 hours into town, and I would find an internet cafe, and I'd sit down and I'd type out my law school application essays and send them to my mother, who lived in Scripps Ranch. And she would print them out and mail them to law schools around the country. And that's how I found out. I got into Fordham Law School in New York City. Cool. And I've been really loving being a lawyer ever since.
I didn't realize you were in Africa. I thought you would come back to the States to do your applications.
Nope. Yep.
So not only are you going to apply to law school, but you're going to do it in the most difficult way possible. Got it.
You're always doing things the hard way. I think washing clothes is one of the hardest things in Africa about, you know, just the creature comfort things. Because, you know, you had no running water. And so you get a giant tin, you know, pan, and you fill it with water, and clothes are so heavy. Hand washing clothes is...
Right.
Oh.
You're reminding me how spoiled we are in the States. This is a good reminder. What was it that made you want to join the Peace Corps?
Actually, that's an amazing question to ask right now, because it was 9/11 and the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. Yeah. And so now that we're coming upon 20 years of, you know, war in Afghanistan, and we're withdrawing, a lot of different emotions, as we all are, about this. But 9/11 happened, you know, September 11th, 2001, which was 2 weeks into our freshman year of college.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I had just, my first election had just happened. I had just been elected dorm president. And that meant that I had to knock on all 300 students' dorms up at UC Berkeley in my dorm to tell them that the campus had been shut down, you know, that the World Trade Towers had collapsed, and the school was processing. And then a lot of our friends who had ROTC scholarships mm-hmm. were no longer college students. They were getting ready to be deployed to a foreign war.
Oh yeah, I do remember, I think, having a friend of mine who was pulled from reserves during that time. But see, I wasn't on campus yet. I was still at home. We were on the quota system for my school, so we didn't start yet. I didn't start for another couple years. But I do remember the check-in process being a little bit more strict, which I thought was a little funny, just because I'm like, I don't think Irvine was going to be a target.
It's like when they put up the fence at Lake Miramar here, because I thought terrorist attack was going to be the lake of Miramar and Script France. No, I really don't think that's really high on anyone's list. Yes. And I was not city council then. I did not make it. But everything had changed after that. And, you know, we were going to war in Afghanistan and then in Iraq. And I suddenly got involved in all of this conversation about national security and international relations. And what does that mean? And are we going to be a generation that only sends soldiers abroad from America? And so mm-hmm. that's why I joined the Peace Corps, was I wanted to represent the United States a bit differently, mm-hmm. you know? And it was pretty amazing, because I would go to the U.S. Embassy often in Botswana, in the capital in Habaroni, mm-hmm. for various things we had to do for Peace Corps. And the young Marines were always the guards at the embassy, and they were always so wonderful. I very much appreciate our Marine Corps force. But they were so great. They'd say, "Well, where's your gun?" And I'd say, "No, I don't have a gun. I'm in the Peace Corps." "You don't have a gun?" I say, "No, I don't really feel that I need one, but I know why you do." But it was great. I just really appreciate everyone who's served the last 20 years. I mean, you know, forever in this country. But I thank our soldiers a lot, and I know they're going through a lot right now. And so I encourage everyone to continue this new conversation I feel we're having as a society on mental mm-hmm. health care, which is honestly just health care. I don't think we have to call it mental health. You know, why do we have to say, "Oh, I'm going to get a physical"? No, you're going to get a wellness check. Why isn't everything part of it? But right. I just hope that everyone out there who's struggling is able to get mental health care. And that's something that I want to help push as a city council member.
You've lived in many places around the world. Do you have a favorite location? And if that's too hard to answer, then can you talk to me or describe to me a favorite experience?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think one of them was when I was in Washington, D.C., and, you know, I was working for Obama administration at the National Labor Relations Board, representing the president's nominees to the National Labor Relations Board in enforcing their decisions about workplace rights and workers' issues all throughout the U.S. Courts of Appeal. And it was an incredible job. A lot of it was just even before the main thrust of the Me Too movement. Mm-hmm. A lot of women were found out that they weren't being paid the same as men, or that they were all being sexually harassed. They would go to management together and ask to be treated better and legally and lawfully, and they'd all get fired oftentimes. And so you do not need a union to be protected in this country from being fired for collective action in the workplace, as long as it's two or more employees. So it was incredible. And I got to work on those cases and get people's jobs back and try, you know, make the employers do better. But they detailed me for a year to Congress to advise the head of the Education and Labor Committee, who's Congressman Bobby Scott. He's still there. He's the ranking member, and now he's the chair. He's a Democrat out of Virginia. Really loved him. And I remember one of the first moments I thought I might run for office someday down the line was in the cafeteria at the Rayburn Building at the House of Representatives, because it looked like the United Nations, just everyone in the country coming in with their ideas and their thoughts to bring to lobby. to ask their Congress representatives for something. And just, you saw people of all shapes, sizes, race, ethnicity, religion, genders, you know, identities. And it was wonderful. And so I just thought, this is the beauty of our legislative democracy in America. And I want to contribute to this. And so I'll never forget standing there in the cafeteria and thinking, maybe someday I'll run for office. And now here we are. So,
did anyone ever like suggest that to you or encourage you in that way? Or did you just naturally feel pulled to that?
Yeah. I thought about it for a while. I thought about being a judge. I clerked for a judge on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Mississippi before I left. And he is the first Black man ever to be appointed to the Fifth Circuit. And he was appointed by President Obama. His name's James Graves. We're still very close. But as a judge, you can make a huge impact in the cases that come to you, but you have to wait for the right case to come to your way, and it may never come. And so I like going out into the community, meeting people, learning from advocacy groups, community groups, or neighbors, what they need, and then going back to City Hall and writing a lot of changes, right, which is what I did with the ghost gun legislation. When I saw that people were being harmed and killed by illegal guns, I, you know, was able to go and write a law to help change it. We have to enforce it, which I'm working on, but so it was honestly after the Trump election, you know, I was interviewing for jobs at the Hillary White House. That's what I thought my next step was, especially because I know a lot of young women, you know, talk ourselves out of things and, oh, I just need a couple more years experience before I do this. And everything changed.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've never done that.
Never did that, right? We're imminently qualified for everything, even though we are. But a friend of mine picked me up off the floor the next day. We're just in tears thinking about what was coming. And she said, have you heard of Emerge California? And I said, I have not. What is that? She said, come with me. Went to a seminar, and it's a program to train. It's called Emerge America, but they have an Emerge California, Emerge Virginia, Emerge Maryland for women who want to run for state and local office. And it helps women learn how to run, what to do, Democratic women. And she said, I think you should apply for this. I think you should start running for office because we need you. And I said, all right, I'll apply. And if I get in, then I will move out to California now and see where it goes. And I did. I got in 2017 and I uprooted and I came home and I started working on other people's campaigns to learn the ropes and became a deputy city attorney and started working for the city that I wanted to help lead so I could learn how City Hall works. And now here we are.
Has your experience with campaigning changed at all since you took that course, or would you say that it's still pretty consistent?
Yes. No. Yeah. There's nothing like the hands-on experience. The amount of money that I had to raise was insane. For a city council race, my opponent raised, I think, a little over $1 million, $1.2 million, somewhere around there. And I had to raise almost $1 million, over $950,000 for this race. And so I had to call everyone I knew, because the maximum contribution is $600 for City Council in San Diego. So three of my ex-boyfriends donated. I know you donated. You know, I know your brother donated.
Oh, really?
Yeah, everyone did. And so it was just learning how to sit in the phone for hours and hours and hours. Then, you know, when you run out of your friends and family and colleagues, you have to start cold calling. And you just get a list of phone numbers of people who donate. And you just have to call and say, hi, my name is Marnie. I'm running for City Council. Can you please support my campaign? So I now know how to pick up the phone and call anybody, so which is helpful now because you can reach out to all other levels of government. When I got the ghost gun ordinance passed in San Diego City, I knew one of my big battles coming up was the online retailers who were shipping these cards across state lines from Nevada, from Utah, from all of them. So I thought, how am I going to enforce that, you know, here in the city of San Diego? And so I picked up the phone and I called the acting U.S. attorney for the Southern District of California, Randy Grossman. I looked him up online and said, hey man, I'm going to need your help. And to his great credit, he called back and said, council member, I heard about your ordinance. I saw it in the news. I'm thrilled. I used to be a prosecutor in the gang violence unit of the San Diego District Attorney's Office, and we need to get these illegal guns off the street. And so we're going to be meeting in the next few weeks to talk about doing statewide enforcement and all that.
That's
so
cool.
The ability to call anyone out of a phone book is very helpful.
Most useful skill. Got it.
Yes. Got it.
What would you say is your approach when you're trying to get dealing with somebody who is strongly opposed to your viewpoint and you're trying to get them to come to the table, or you're trying to get them to negotiate further? And has your approach changed at all since you started?
Yeah, I mean, it's always something that I really valued is listening to folks and you know, trying to hear each other out and hear perspectives. And I think one of the things that has been about this job is there's been a lot of anger in the world right now. And, you know, justifiable anger. Things are very tense in our world right now. We have a pandemic that's killed over 600,000 Americans and shut down countless jobs. And we're, you know, struggling to make sure the businesses get the relief they need and tenants stay in their homes, but landlords get paid so they can pay their mortgages. And, you know, kids aren't in school. And it's just, it's very hard right now. And then we had the incredible racial justice movement over the last summer when George Floyd's murder happened, and we can officially call it murder under the law because the officer who killed him was convicted of murder. Mm-hmm. But there's just a lot of anger in society, and sadly we're seeing a lot of local government officials resign in waves all throughout the country. The New York Times did an article on it over the summer talking about all of the mayors who are stepping down. The public health officers we're seeing are being harassed in their homes. People are protesting outside their homes, sending them death threats for just trying to explain to people what vaccines are and mm-hmm. how transmissible this deadly virus is and why you have to wear masks. And so that has been a very difficult part of this job. And, you know, I had to change my phone number, my personal cell phone number, after I got elected because it was leaked on the internet. And
wait, that's why?
That's why I had to change it. Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, I had to have our police team, the SWAT team had to come to my apartment, not an emergency, as a proactive visit to know where the exits were and meet with my apartment management to know how to pull me out if needed. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that I didn't think I was quite signing up for, you know, but you become kind of the face of things and people need an outlet to be angry at. And
yeah.
So one thing I've been really telling a lot of folks, especially as we talk about this new movement on taking care of our mental health, because if you don't, it will spill out into violence, mm-hmm. is everyone told me, when you get elected, Marnie, you have to have a thick skin and not let anything affect you and just let it roll off you. And I do have a lot of people yell at me and you know, it hurts when they're your friends, especially, but I don't think that having a thick skin is one possible or two healthy. You know,
right.
It's going to affect you. If someone says something harmful or negative, or if you're hearing something that's racist or sexist or gender biased, and, you know, people were calling me the little girl who's running for office when I was the only one and only woman in the race.
Ooh.
Yeah. And hey, this little girl beat the crap out of all the men we won. But I tell people, you know, yeah, it's not healthy to have a thick skin. It's impossible. What you need is a way to process mm-hmm. all of the emotions that are come your way. Mm-hmm. And that's why you need friends and family who help support and folks who are willing to listen and friends like you. You know, you and I have been friends.
Since kindergarten.
I know. Which, what, 12 years ago?
Yeah, sure. 4 score and 12 years ago. I don't think it's a bit more than that. But you know what? Let's just say it's been a long time.
Right. We've known each other for the great majority of our lives.
And we lived a whole block away from each other.
Exactly. So great. And you've been such a great friend. I'm just so glad to see you. And thank you for doing this podcast.
Thank you for coming on this podcast. It means a lot. So thank you. I'm always really inspired when I get to catch up with you and hear about what you're working on. It's always fun to hear about what people do, but your work is really cool because it impacts our society in like a visceral way. You're also literally changing the face of politics. I mean, you're a young woman in office, and it's just cool to see, not only just for you, but for others as well.
Some incredible things are happening as we, you know, record this podcast. I mean, women brought down a sitting governor in New York for his sexual harassment, you know?
Yep.
Well, resigned. Right now, R. Kelly is on trial for sexual assault of minors. Harvey Weinstein is in prison and is going to go on a second trial. So at least being an era where women are being heard and listened to, and, you know, our due process and our courts of law are doing the jobs they're supposed to do. So,
yeah. Okay. I'm going to try to wrap this up a little bit because I know that I have a hard cutoff time with you. What advice would you give to your younger self? Go.
I've been thinking about this one because that's a good question. Advice to my younger self when I was in my 20s. I think I would have told myself to save more money because you know, I'm going to embark on a career that's all public interest and all public service. I have only worked for nonprofits or governments, agencies, my entire career, 10 years as a litigator. And, you know, I'm 38 years old and I've loved it. Your job is more than just the money you get. It's the feelings you get that from doing the work and making a difference in the lives of others. And so I've been highly compensated in my jobs emotionally and feeling fulfilled in what I do to help people and move the ball forward in our society. But it's not money. Being a nonprofit lawyer or, you know, working for government is certainly not the money. And I know we're all struggling as millennials with the cost of living. You know, it's incredibly difficult to buy a house for any of us. A lot of us are paying off student loans. I pay $2,100 to rent a one bedroom, and I drive a 2012 Camry, which I will hold on to the day I die. But I guess, you know, having known that, it might have been better to start saving earlier. But when you're 22 years old,
that's hard, especially at that age bracket. I mean, I was paid the rates that hadn't been updated for decades. So essentially, I was underpaid when I first was starting out. So
yep.
But yeah, I get what you're trying to say.
Yeah. My other advice would be to follow your dreams. That's what I've been doing. And I absolutely love it. And I've been so blessed and met so many incredible people who have helped me along the way. And believe me, most people didn't think I'd win running for office. You should see my dad the day I said I'm moving for Africa for 2 years to join the Peace Corps. He didn't think that would work out. I started a clinic for civil rights in Mississippi that's still running to this day that I got in a prayer and a whim. And so I definitely would tell my younger self to follow your dreams.
I love that. Okay, one more. What's your approach to work-life balance? Or do you think that that's a myth?
Yeah, it's hard. It's not easy. It's, you know, city council job. It's, you know, San Diego's the 8th largest city in the country. And so the top 10 biggest cities in the United States, you know, it's all full-time jobs for city council members. And it's 24/7. You know, I had 7 a.m. events on Saturday and Sunday last weekend. Had to kick off fun runs at 7 a.m. and be on the stage. And okay, you know, and that's, but that's okay. I mean, I love it. I love people and seeing people, but I make a conscious effort to see my friends, you know, family. I have the best friends in the world who are all so supportive and family. And I tell them to please be patient with me, especially on the campaign trail. I would have to cancel on dinner in a heartbeat. And yeah, they would say, you know, that maybe Marty's not coming, and they would all forgive me and not ever worry or give me, you know, a hard time for not showing up for things, for social events, because they said, that's our way of supporting you for running for office.
Right.
That's what I do, is I just tell all my friends and family, it's going to be, you know, hit or miss, but having people surrounded by you who understand that and support you in that way is how I'm able to really tune off when I get there and not have to apologize for the first 10 minutes for being late. So it's really nice to, and that's what I tell a lot of folks is like, you know, our healthcare workers are going through so much right now. Our first responders are going through so much, teachers, you know, everyone. And people often say, how can you help? Help by supporting them in their friendships too.
And that is my interview with Marnie. Thank you so much, Marnie, for coming on and sharing your time with me. Always good to catch up with you. Normally, I would end it just right here, but I'm going to keep on one little story that I just thought was so funny and endearing. I ask anybody who comes on to agree to an interview with me the same four questions for potentially use in social media if it's anything good. But I really love this story so much, so I decided to keep it in here at the end. Marnie, please do not kill me. Sorry. Okay, this is really silly and meaningless, but what is your favorite curse word? And I know you're just thinking, shit, but just go with it.
It should. It's S-H-I-T. I'm not going to lie. So this will be an embarrassing moment that hopefully will get cut out of the editing. So it's very versatile. Use it for any situation. But when I first, you know, got inaugurated in December of 2020, it was a really scary time in society. Height of one of the COVID pandemic, you know, outbreaks, and our hospitals were failing and people were in ICU and it was horrible. And so we had to be on Zoom city council meetings. I still haven't been to the dais once. I've done everything on Zoom and everyone's in the same boat.
Wow.
But we have to open the city council meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. And usually when you're in a room full of tons of people, if you forget a word or two, you can kind of muddle your way through because everyone's saying it at once. But when it came my turn to rotate through and open with the Pledge of Allegiance, I'm by myself in my office looking at the American flag, so nervous because I'm like, hey, don't screw it up. And I completely do. The Girl Scout law comes in. I pledge allegiance to the flag. I live by the Girl Scout law. Everyone on the Zoom is just has their hands in their face. They are laughing so hard. And I sit down in liberty and justice for all. And I sit down, forget the Zoom is on, and go, shit. So I think all of my staff are on the floor. I get texts from my colleagues that say, Marnie, no, you are loved.
I, for one, can second that. Marnie, you are loved. That concludes this episode with Marnie von Wilpert. If you liked this episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, leave a review. I'm your host, Michelle McAllister. Thank you for listening. See you next week.